I don't accept my flaws, right? I don't accept the shadow self. I don't accept the mistakes. I'm working to correct them, right? Because you're not your mistakes, you're your patterns.
What's up, guys? So today's episode, we have an amazing guest. He's a thought leader. He's an entrepreneur. He's a speaker. He's really an overall just a polymath, a genius. And I had a good time chatting with him. His name is 19 Keys, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, listen, man. So I've been a fan for a long time.
Yes, likewise.
You wear so many hats. You're a speaker, content creator, investor, entrepreneur. And I think probably what you're most known for is just being a thought leader. I've heard you refer to yourself as a mix between Malcolm X and James Bond.
Yeah.
And I love that. So tell me a little bit about your origin story. How did you land on the name 19 Keys?
Yeah, well, you know, I was born in St. Louis, raised in Oakland. St. Louis is deeply my street side. You understand me? Where I got into the most trouble, where I got locked up a lot of times before I was 19 years old. Mm. Where that was the time I caught my last case. Mm. And then Oakland, that's where I got a lot of my street revolutionary consciousness from. Mm. You understand me? Growing up around the black Muslims, but at the same time, if you grow up in Oakland, you know, you're forced to have a knowledge of self. You're forced to have awareness of history because it's everywhere in Oakland. That is the character of Oakland, the Panthers and, you know, the different eras that came through and the political consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right outside of Oakland, you have the place where they have the most activism going on 24/7, which is Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have, growing up in it, whether you're in the streets or whether you're a college student, you're going to be immersed in the culture of Oakland, which is historical and political consciousness and awareness of reality. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have some of that revolutionary spirit. So growing up in St. Louis and Oakland, you know, St. Louis, you really get the country ignorance a lot.
Mm. When did you move from St. Louis to Oakland?
So I moved from St. Louis at 2 years old.
At two, okay, right? Okay. And by the way, we're both from St. Louis,
yeah,
and we were born in the same hospital. Yeah. This is insane. You're going.
So I moved from St. Louis at 2 years old. I was in Oakland probably till around, you know, somewhere around teenage years, where I went to middle school in St. Louis. Mm. Then I was going back and forth between my father and my mother based on a marital situation. Mm. So when middle school started, I was going to a different school every year up until college, right? So from like fifth grade to sixth grade, a different school, seventh, eighth, mm. ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th. Mm. It was always back and forth. So some was back and forth between Oakland and St. Louis my more high school years. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up finishing in St. Louis at Roosevelt High School, a crazy-ass high school.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. if you ever seen Lean on Me, that was my high school.
I know it well. I know Roosevelt. Yep.
As I first seen somebody get shot at high school, mm-hmm. you understand me? Mm-hmm. And it was just like a normal day. Mm-hmm. So it kind of lets you know you gain a certain emotional resilience towards trauma mm-hmm. growing up in St. Louis.
A lot of people don't know St. Louis is always either it's always in the top three of most dangerous cities in the nation.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I say we because I'm from there too, and we lead in that category. It's crazy.
It's unfortunate. And growing up in that, I was able to see so many different aspects of reality. I had, you know, jobs working corporate at jobs, doing working at Prada at jobs, being in security at jobs, you know, being in the streets to selling weed, selling drugs, you know, and doing criminal things. So it's like I've seen and been around all different aspects of different characters. So I feel like, you know, one of my gifts is empathy. Mm-hmm. You understand me? And being able to see things from other people's perspective, even if they can't see it from mine. And most mm-hmm. times, a person can't.
They can't.
So most people want me to be open towards their perspective, but they have the inability to be open towards mine. And so they think they have true openness, but they don't. They only have it towards themselves. Yeah. So it's a selfish openness. Mm-hmm. But growing up, you know, I used to go to political rallies and not see black men there at all. So I used to grab a mic and speak for what I thought was representing my people, because most of the time it was about issues that affected my people. Mm-hmm. So in Oakland, you'll get a sea of whites or Asians out there, and it'll be because of, you know, police murder or something that happened. And I'm like, yo, where is young black men in representation when we're talking about young black men, mm-hmm. right? And so I always wanted to be that person. I wasn't looking to become a speaker, right? But it was always one of my gifts. So anytime I recognize a gift, I have to use that for some purposeful fulfillment. From there, there was this school, Chabot College, that asked me to come speak. This was when I had like 400-500 followers. And I was talking to these students that I coach in my program about how, and they helped me realize, like, the first time I ever had a moment of, like, virality was the moment that I actually invested into my skills and gifts, right? And you're putting out content all day long, but it wasn't until I actually put money into it and hired a videographer. That first piece of content that I ever hired somebody for, it went viral.
Wow.
And almost every piece of minutes of that went viral consecutively, right? And so from there, I never dropped the ball on investing in myself and picking up my gifts and skills and talents.
Why do you think that was? Why was it when you invested, then something changed? What happened there?
I think it was flow. You know, one thing I've been big on is flow, right? Like, flow, you know, it can be of being present, but also being purposeful. And I think in that moment, I had a vision, right? And this vision was, I wasn't just speaking to those students. I'm going to go in there, and the students was going to being an experience of watching me speak to the world, right? So I'm in this small room where the students are listening, but we're going to capture this for the world to see. And so, you know, it's like in physics when they say when you observe an atom, it changes. I believe that's the same thing with attention and people are with cameras. When you feel like you observe, people clutch up, right? They can't perform the same, whether that attention is happening in present or whether it's going to happen later. So for me, you know, I just felt like I was in flow state of being an observation that this is something that is going to help affect and make change within the world. And that development of their skills and that journey towards mastery, you understand me, allowed me to, you know, appreciate that moment, be in the flow, right? And actually put energy of intentional investment dollars, right? I just feel like it was the perfect storm to magnetize that moment.
Love that. And I love what you say about flow because you... Now that you're saying it, I see that's exactly what it is. When you speak, it's spontaneous, it's extemporaneous. Flow is some energy from, I believe, from the divine when you're really tapped in. They say, it's funny, I was reading something the other day. Malcolm Gladwell, you know, he's got the 10,000 hours to become a, you know, master. He said, if you're actually in flow, you can cut that in half to 5,000. Because that flow state is that direct connection.
Right.
Tell me about your, you created something that I love. It's called High Level Conversations.
Yes, sir.
What is a high level conversation and compare it to a low level conversation?
I think most people have more experience with low level conversations than they do high level. The low level conversations are the average conversations that are built around gossip, you know, nonsense, distraction, escapism, entertainment, conversations that don't lead anywhere, conversations that don't give you an overview of things. See, but even in low-level conversations, to give you the actual definition of like low-level is more so the micro, it's the details. Where the high-level, you know, is giving you an higher observation of reality and life. So it can be without my own opinion. It can just, I'm just giving you a high-level overview, right? So most people are not used to, you know, understanding things from a high-level perspective. Most people try to learn through the details. And the details can be the worst thing to learn from if you don't already have a high-level perspective to build off of, right? When we learn, we're learning from, you know, one thing I like to teach is learning how to learn because most people don't know how to learn, right?
Nice.
So
nice.
When you're learning, you're going to learn from the details or you're going to learn from the high level. And the details work better when you can just be in centered focus and you're just going in trying to extract the knowledge. But if you don't have structure to start from, you don't have any knowledge in the first place to understand it, it's going to be hard and none of it's going to compute. It's going to fall off. So first, your goal is to get the overview of it. What is the actual high level of it? You understand me? Then once you get that, you can start adding in the details of understanding. So it's like casting a large flashlight on the whole thing. Then you can sort of center that into like a laser and get the details. But most people start with the details and like, I just don't get this. Well, start with understanding at a high level. Then go in for the low level details.
And ironically, I guess the high level is the foundation.
It's the foundation. So we expose you. And then from that exposure, you can build on top of that.
One thing I've heard you say is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to misquote you, but you said that knowledge of self starts with understanding that you are God.
Yes, sir.
I love this, and I think it's something that a lot of people don't understand. Can you clarify a little bit what you mean?
Yeah. The funny thing about reality is so many people have so many different definitions of God. But it really stems from all of the same thing, consciousness, right? However you wrap it around. When people talk about God, they talk about the creator of movement, the creator of life, the creator of all, right? And so when you're talking about that, you're saying that there's this source from which all things stem from. And you believe that source from which all things stem from is the grand designer of all things, which you consider to be called God or Allah or whichever language you decide to utilize, right? So for me, when we're talking about knowledge of self, right? Who are you? Which is a question that most people do not deal with. How you doing? What you do? Right? What you want to do? We deal with everything but the existential, internalized questions of who are you? Right? And that you, when you're talking about the soul or the spirit, the breath, that prana, that ki, that chi, you understand me? When you're getting to the focus of who you are within self, that molecule of self, you're talking about your attachment to the source of all things, right? And from that source, you can draw from it. And being able to draw from source, meaning that you can do all things that source can do. In a book called Theology of Time, written by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he has a quote where he breaks down. And I could say it quickly, it was about, you started from a zero. We're all zeros. He said, go to the board and I want you to put a zero and I want you to put a hyphen, right? He said, now put another zero on the other end. He said, okay, from here you have nothing that goes from nothing. He said, now I want you to put a one on the other end of that zero. So he said, now you have a fraction of a one. You have half a one. He said, now I want you to take that one and I want you to put it on the other side of the zero. And he said, now on this side of the zero, it's a 10, right? Mm-hmm. He said that zero is that God standing next to us and giving us value. Because when God stands next to us, it 10x's our value, right? So we go from nothing to something. And then when you add more zeros, that is more people that you're bringing into the knowledge of God and the knowledge of self, right? People who were once nothing. So without knowledge of self, you are nothing. You don't have the capability of utilizing your mind, utilizing your spirit, utilizing your will, bringing things into existence. But when you teach a man, something happens profoundly. He knows how to use his mind. All of a sudden, he can conjure his visions and his dreams into reality. So what most people are doing when they're teaching people is that they're trying to give them the presence of God to stand next to them, give them the reality of God. And once you have that, then you are tenfold. But that knowledge of God is the knowledge of self. Right. So you are this infinite potential. Right. But if you see a man that does not stand up and a woman that does not stand up for themselves, that's not God. It's not until they become the erect version of themselves where they stand up, stomach in, chest out, head up, and they move about reality with focus, with vision, with application. You can see that that person knows who they are. They are wide awake, living man and woman. The presence of God is within them.
Would you say this is the foundation of and the most important thing that you try to convey to people?
Yeah, the mind of God, crystallizing that, right? Most people believe in Christ, but Christ is that crystallization of consciousness, right? Once you reach a certain point, can it be crystallized, right? People love crystals because of the geometric crystallization, that this is energy trapped into form, right? But what happens when your mind is in an energetic form, right? Like, look at water. Water has many different versions. It can go from steam, solid, liquid, gas, and fourth phase of water, right? But water maintains the same amount of molecules and protons. It just rearranges. It's the same thing with consciousness. When consciousness rearranges and it becomes crystallized, it's a higher form of energy. When we see a snowflake crystallized based on the vibration of the Earth's magnetic field, we can see a crystallization of a vibration. So we can operate at low vibration or high. We know we can go from delta states to gamma, right? So what happens if you can always be in gamma, where you're always at heightened focus, emotional resilience, higher creativity?
How do you do that?
Well, it's many different functions, brother. I would say, I like to look at the ease for me, right? It goes from education, exposure, experience, environment, right? if you focus on knees, you really have the ease to be able to execute. So your environment is who you're around, which has a big dictation upon your nature.
Huge.
Right? So you can be a good person, but if you're in the wrong environment, then it can corrupt you. Right? I've seen, you know, many people in the industry where, you know, they are around something that is the opposite of themselves, but in that environment, it's a judge-free zone. But when they leave that environment, they judge themselves the most, right? So they have to go back into that environment because they don't want to be judged, right? Because by themselves, they're killing themselves, literally. We know that suicide is a high rate within men, right? Because men cannot deal with the solitude of their own thoughts and judgment. But you are in an environment that's conducive to your nature, then it makes you feel good about yourself because you're doing things that are connected to your purpose and your will and your drive. When you're doing things that are not connected to who you are, you'll feel like you're going against who you are. You become an enemy within your own body, right? So environment of having the right influence and structure and peer and group around you is key, right? Then you're talking about education. Our people suffer from a lack of proper education. You understand me? America suffers from the lack of proper education. We're supposed to be a first world country, but we have a third world education system, right? It doesn't teach you how to become enlightened, doesn't teach you how to become a genius, an entrepreneur. We have a capitalist system, but it doesn't teach you capital, doesn't teach you financial literacy, doesn't teach you credit, doesn't teach you how to set up trust and build and how to invest in bonds. Why not? Because the leaders, they didn't design it for you to lead them, right? They didn't design it for you to lead yourself. It's designed for you to need to be led so that you can fall into the system function as human capital. But as Frederick Douglass says, knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. So the quickest way to free yourself is to know thyself, right? To be educated on all things around you, from your mind, body, spirit, your environment, right? Everything that gives you the ability, which I believe is the highest level of freedom, which is choice. Because now you know what you can do and what you cannot do. But an ignorant man is stuck by the circumference of his knowledge. You understand me? But he has to be freed. You understand me? By learning. So I believe that education is one of those keys, because if you look at all different people, how they built their wealth, it was based on them educating themselves, right? Not based on the law changing, not based on that. It was we educated ourselves, right? That was our primal thing. Then when we're talking about exposure, a man can only, his mind is only as vast to his exposure, right?
Okay.
I always use the analogy in the universe. The universe expands based on where light reaches. In the mind of a man, it's the same way, right? There are areas that are dark, areas that we have yet to expand our consciousness in. But once they expand, they cannot be contracted. So when you take somebody out their environment, when you take somebody and expose them to new knowledges and new truths, now their mind has expanded. Now it is up to them to fill those areas. And they can't be fulfilled until they fill those areas with light, with consciousness, with knowledge, with purpose. So by giving someone exposure, they're no longer limited by their reality. They can be free by their imagination. They can be free by their experiences. And that's why it goes to experiences as well, because experience is actually what you do with the knowledge you have, what you do with the exposure, what you do with the environment, right? So being able to take these foundational things and man having principles to be able to live upon sets him on that journey of self-discovery, sets him on that journey of knowledge of self.
Love that. Wow. That's the formula right there. Formula for freedom.
It really is.
How you feeling?
Man, I feel good. Getting feel a little good? Sweat in. A little sweat in.
All right, man. Well, let's step out. Let's cool up, cool down a little bit.
All right, done deal.
Get some coconut water and continue this amazing conversation.
Let's do it.
High-level conversation. Keys, tell me, what was the most difficult decision you had to make in order to fulfill your destiny?
Realizing that everybody I love can't go with me. I think that was probably, as you asked me that question, what comes up in my first mind is that I got a picture of loved ones that didn't get to go on the journey with me, but that was there right before the journey started, right? And realizing who's going to help you, you know, in your movement and who's going to be luggage on the movement. You understand me? It was key. So it's like in the environment of the mission and the journey that I was developing for, they were necessary. Much like a womb is necessary for a child until he goes into the next stage of life, right? I don't need that womb anymore. I may need the outer comfort of my mother, but I don't need the womb that protects me. We're all born in darkness and in water, but a lot of people fear darkness and water, right? It's no longer necessary for life, even though darkness is, but to be encased in water isn't. So you have to know what's preparing you for the next stage and what's to take you on that next stage. And so for me, being able to clearly understand that the things that were with me before will help me get to where I am, right? But they don't need to go where I'm going.
I let that sink in because I think that resonates with a lot of people that want to keep people in their lives that may have been part of their past but not part of their future. Mm. And it's so important. I think you talk about auditing a lot, and I do too, and to audit your life and to ask yourself, is this person an asset or a liability? Because like you said in the sauna, environment is key, right? You look at the old saying, man is a product of his environment. Environment is probably the most crucial aspect to success. Mm-hmm. One thing, I saw a video of yours the other day, and I thought it was super clever. Tell me, what is old age?
I run across people all the time talking about they're old. And I've always had this concept about age that I just felt like didn't quite make sense. You know, when you ask a person, they'd be like, yo, man, I'm about to be 60 years old, man. I'm getting old. I said, well, you remember when you was 19? That's an old age to you now, right? You've been there, you've done that. You understand me? To go back to that level of education, experience, and ignorance would hurt you. You couldn't use that old age, right? And we as human beings, we have biological functions that we grow into. We reach peak level creativity at 50 years old, right? Our brains change patterns at the age of 25, right? So everything about us becomes new, but we don't get a manual on life, right? So we don't know. And we don't get new instructions for the new ages that we grow into. So when I get to 40 years old, that's going to be a new age. I'm going to need new instructions on how to deal with this new age.
Wow.
So I don't believe in old age in the sense of that's what we're going into. Old age is what we came from. Most people, even language, is unfair because our language doesn't look at the future as an arrow pointed forward. Some people languages look at the future as an arrow pointed backward. Some people directions is northeast, southwest. So based on your language and programming and indoctrination in society, you can have an unfair reality, right, that can make you feel depressed about the future. So I try to get people to change their language, which changes their viewpoint of reality and how they express themselves.
Mm. I love that because a lot of people listening may know I got my degree in cultural anthropology. Mm. And anthropology, which is the study of people across time and space. And one of the principles in anthropology is called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, also called linguistic relativity. Your language determines your reality. Give you an example. In a tribe in Africa, I think they're called the Himba tribe, they don't have a word for blue, so they can't see it.
That's powerful.
When they showed them shades of blue to green, they said it was all green because they didn't have a word for it. The words that we use determine our reality. I tell people all the time, there's no such thing as failure. It's just experimenting. Mm-hmm. But when you hold on to these words, it affects you.
Right.
It changes your brain. It changes your mood, changes your energy. Mm-hmm. So I love that what you're saying, how you look at age. That's a new age that I'm going into.
Yes.
To learn new things.
Yes.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love
every that. Level of consciousness comes with a new language. You know, you don't speak the same language as your old self because you don't express yourself the same way anymore. The wealthy man doesn't speak the same language as the man that is impoverished. He's learned new languages because he learned new ways to move. So, you know, understanding language that we utilize can, and being multilingual, right, is key. No matter who you are, being multilingual is key. Speaking one language is a handicap, whether it's one language in English, because even when we speak English language, you still don't know all the words.
Yeah.
So you can't even fully express English language. Right? It's going to be based on your education level. Being multilingual and speaking a mathematical language, which is intellect, rationality, thought, right? That's the language of God. God is very rational. Everything that he created has a purpose. That's rational thinking, right? There's nothing in our nature that we found yet that does not have a purpose. When we look at Fibonacci sequence and we look at golden ratios and geometry, we find the blueprint and the thumb and the signature of God there, right? All this stuff was made mathematical, right? It wasn't made wildly, right? In the sense of where we consider wild to be savage. No, it had a mathematical function and flow. And when it doesn't, there's a mutation. There's something out of rhythm and out of cycle, right? And so sometimes we are out of rhythm with God's language, right? Because we're not operating in a mathematical, logical, rational, or even emotionally intelligent sense.
I love that. You remind me of a study I read about people who began to learn Sanskrit. Mm. They saw their brains developing in certain areas as they started to learn this new language. Yeah. So this show is all about healing. You know, we get in the sauna, we heal, we're here, we're, you know, the self-care. Is there anything, because you've started from a place, I think, of struggle, and I think a lot of great people do, you know, that flower that grows out of the sidewalk. Is there anything that you're healing now?
I think just the wounds of undiscipline, the wounds of family. You know, I think that if you ask anybody, I don't have regrets. I don't believe in that idea because the idea of regrets is meaning that you're supposed to be perfect in the first place. I was never supposed to be perfect. The problem with like regrets and things of that nature is that society places upon you perfection and you don't meet that expectation, so you have these regrets and then it creates insecurities. Mine is more so when I think about family, right? And I think about my own disciplines and wanting to live up to the maximization of my potential and knowing that the only thing that stops me is my own discipline, right? So these is what I'm battling with becoming that greater version. But as I was listening to a book the other day, it say, if a person wants to become like a monk, what's going to happen before that is they're going to be their most undisciplined self. Because now they're going to go through this journey, right, of getting rid of all those things to prepare them for what they want to become. So you have to be careful of you want to become rich. Now all your faults of indebtedness starts to pop up, right? Your spending habits. You're going to be taken along that journey that's going to prepare you for what you want to become. But you think that being taken along that journey looks like you're going through successful steps. No, it looks like you're going through the darkest steps, right, to prepare you for that light of what you want to be. So when we see people make mistakes, sometimes it's preparing them for greatness. You understand me? Instead of we judge them before they get to the point of greatness. When we look at success, success validates process, right? But sometimes we don't let people go through the full process before we judge the results. So I'm one of those people where I say, don't try to tell me I'm not perfect, right? Perfection is a state. And if you reach perfection, the only thing left is imperfection. If you got something that's perfectly still, if you move it just a little bit, it's no longer perfect, right? So I don't believe in perfection. I believe in looking at people as real human beings, right? I expect the shadow self. I expect flaws. I expect mistakes. I expect lessons. But what I respect is the person that strives to be better, right? So my goal as a human being is I want to be judged as a human being, but judged also as somebody on the merit of their word that they're constantly striving to be better. I don't accept my flaws, right? I don't accept the shadow self. I don't accept the mistakes. I'm working to correct them, right? Because you're not your mistakes, you're your patterns.
I love that. And I know your life is dedicated on striving for excellence, not perfection, and getting better and better and better. And I could tell you're a reader. You just said you were reading a book. Tell me, how important is reading? And is there anything that you'd like to share that you're reading currently?
I'm reading currently for the third time, Way of the Superior Man.
Okay.
So I'm not reading, I'm listening to it.
Okay. That's how I digest it too, listening. Like so I'm on a walk or
Yeah. So I was on the plane and on the way to the plane, it's a 5-hour listen. So it takes my day of in between time doing things. Sometimes I'll listen to it a couple of times because there's certain points. What I've learned about life and I learned about things that you want to become, you have to learn about them. If you're learning about them, your brain starts to go through this process of believing that you are that thing, right? So sometimes we don't have enough information on what we want to be, right? And so if I want to become a better and more superior man, I need to engulf myself with that type of information and knowledge. So now I'm making decisions from that informed place, right? So for me, learning is the process of becoming, right? So when I feel like I lack in an area, I feel like I don't have enough discipline, let me study discipline then, right? Most people would never feel like I'm undisciplined, but they had never studied discipline. What is the root word of discipline? Where does it come from, right? How do I become it? What are the issues that get people becoming undisciplined? Because all study for me is knowledge of self, right? All of it you have to go through, like all of reality we live is an experience within ourselves. You understand me? We live inside our own brains. So all information that we get, we can only filter it based on who we are, right? So therefore, when I'm learning anything, it's teaching me about myself. So therefore, it's easy for me to contrast something about the universe with myself. It's easy for me to contrast something about society with myself or my people. And so I like applicable thought, things that I can use. I'm not much of one in the fairy and the wind. I like to bring it down to earth.
Mm. You don't read much fiction.
Last time I read a fiction book fully, I was locked up. I was locked up for a case that I beat. It was an assault case. I took it to trial. We beat it. But I was reading this fiction book, and it was about like a bank robbery or something. It was very vivid in my mind. You understand me? I imagined celebrities as character. I think Will Smith was a main character in one of the scenes. It was very vivid. But I remember reading that whole book, and afterwards, I closed that book. I look around, and I'm still in the cell. And I got to thinking, like, this just got me no further to my freedom, right?
Mm.
And my older brother gave me a list of books to read. And these were books like Socrates and Aristotle and all these different books, Art of Deception, because it was teaching me about legalese. It was teaching me about the way that people think, society thinks, right? Perception, a bunch of different things. And I could use that thinking for the strategy, right, of beating my case. So once I got that not guilty verdict, I decided that I didn't want to read anything that wasn't applicable to my freedom and power. So I haven't read a full fiction book since.
Wow. I'm actually the same way. I really only spend my time reading. I like movies. I like, you know, Avatar. And,
right. And I don't have a problem with fiction because I think they help with the creative process.
Yeah.
Stories, you know, can help you think about life in different parables.
And it's a lot of information hidden in those stories
right.
That can be applied to life. Speaking of fairy tales, if you could wave a magic wand at the world, and tomorrow, whatever you decided to change would be changed. What would it be?
That wine might have to give me more than one wish. I guess the easiest one that I feel like solves so many issues would be giving the world enlightenment. Because I think that the world faces the issue. The only reason that there could be oppression, only reason there could be slavery, only reason there can be poverty and ignorance and crime and violence and mental illness and ailments and things of that nature is because of the lack of enlightenment that exists in the average person. They can easily be fooled. They can easily be manipulated and taken advantage of. I talked about this idea of when you go places, it's dangerous to be impressed, right? Being impressed by things can represent that they're more than you already are.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
An impression is just that. It's placing in mold on something. It's changing the integrity of what it was before. Person goes to a celebrity residence or industry party, and they're so enamored and impressed, they can now be manipulated by that impression. There's a society called DEFCON 19. They are the largest hacker society in the world. And they talk about the ability to create an image mode key from a blank. And they do it through a process called impressioning. So they will take a blank key and they will stick it into the keyhole. Now, each keyhole has these different ridges. Some are deeper than others. So by putting it in there, they can see the etches that it makes on the key and how deep to cut. And they can easily make a mode to open that door. Because average doors and average keys or average locks are made the same. The companies don't have the ability to just make customized locks for everybody. So people who break into doors and hacker societies knows the same thing with computers and codes. But it's also the same thing with human beings. People have similar to about the same ideas and thoughts. They're mostly manufactured the same way. You come from America, certain background, geographical location, your ethnicity. I can learn who you are, the grooves of your thinking, and then I can create a key to manipulate you and unlock you so that you can do what I want you to do. But first, I have to create an impression upon you, right? And so people go to places, they get impressed, and the person knows, like, the moment that I got you impressed, I have you. I can manipulate you now, right? Oh, you like my car, or you like my house, or you like my girl, or you like the money, right? Or you like the fame. You're impressed. When you know that you are God, you can't be impressed by nothing but God. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I go everywhere with a stoicness. That's nice. But what I am impressed with is how your mind was able to will this into existence, because that's God, right? The devil can be how you use your mind, but God is always the domain of the mind. So you can use your will for, you know, ignorance or negativity, right? That's a devaluing way of using your mind. You use it for good. That's a godly way of using it. So when I see man that has possession of greatness, I'm not fascinated by what he has, but how he was able to do it. How he was able to use the faculties of his mind, take from a thought in the darkness and bring it into a reality. That I am impressed with, because that leaves an impression on my mind to use it in the same way.
And what is enlightenment?
Enlightenment can be broken down simply. You know, consciousness is like being aware of something. So you can be aware that you're eating wrong and still go eat a McDonald's burger. You can be aware that cigarettes are bad and still go smoke, but you're conscious. But enlightenment is being aware and making a change. So when the light of that knowledge actually reaches the right places in the mind, it activates it to make change based on the knowledge of awareness. So where consciousness is awareness, enlightenment is change. But also enlightenment can be seen as literal light in the mind, truth. When a person has truth, they are enlightened. You cannot be enlightened with lies. You can only be enlightened with truth, and truth is an electrical energy, right? Literally. When a person, sometimes truth can shock people and it can hurt them, it can kill them, it can give them heartbreak. When everybody's literally not ready for the truth. But it's a shockwave that was sent across the planet Earth when everybody becomes aware of the truth of reality and have the energy and the mind to deal with it. And they're enlightened enough to make that change.
Is the truth of reality, as a lot of religious and spiritual traditions say, a oneness with all beings?
You know, I just did a mastermind with my brothers and my father and a couple of my friends. And it was called The Mastermind of Intellectual Oneness. And it comes from, number one, because some human beings are radical in their oneness with animals, radical in their oneness with plants, sea life, the environment, but they don't have oneness with human beings and human connection. So when we talked about that one, you know, I'm 19 keys, so I'm a very mathematical guy. You understand me? I see things in logical complexities, but in simple concepts. We're all ones. I'm a one, you a one. Even if, you know, you got three people in a race, they're going to say one person is first place, second, third place. Or two is just two ones, or three is just three ones. We're just different degrees of ones, right? But we're all ones. There's 8 billion ones on this planet Earth. But each person reaches different degrees of their oneness within self. And different people reach different degrees of their oneness with reality and everyone else. Inside the mind, in my domain of dreams, that's my oneness with self. But when I awake, I am in the oneness of everyone else. You understand me? Now we're in this collective oneness where we are sharing reality. In my mind, I have full control. I can change things at will. I can fly. I can change colors. Anything can happen. In reality, I have to fight against the will of each everyone else. Right? So when you're knowing that you're sharing reality with everyone, right, then you learn to be in collaboration with the ones around you, right? Because you realize that war comes from the friction of mostly ideas. But to be in oneness with everybody in reality means that there's freedom, justice, equality, enlightenment, peace. You understand me? So learning oneness is key with the human family. Then that oneness with themselves, because if you get to that depth of that, then you will also understand the oneness with the rest of the universe.
How do we do that, man? This has been a goal of mine. I guess a goalless goal, because I live my life with the mantra, all is well and unfolding exactly as it should. There's a trust in the divine order of things for me. But I've always had this, almost a dream, a vision of seeing that oneness, that enlightenment, amas, like everybody can wake up from the dream and realize that we are one.
Yeah.
One family. And we start to take care of each other. How do we do this? Do we use media? Do we use music? Do we use art? Is it everything?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything all at once.
Yeah. five percenters, right? It's like,
yes, it's 5%. Also, but that's a key, right? You have the 5, you have the 10, you have the 85% of the world. You have to realize, like, you are a person that has grand ideas about the world, right? Who believes in himself and his ability to make, manufacture, and change. You know yourself very well. Everybody doesn't have that, and they will not get that. So what you have to want for people is the degree of what they're willing to want for themselves at the highest level.
Yeah.
Because everybody's not meant to be the greatest speaker or communicator, to be out front or whatever. But society has gotten to a point where we compare our gifts to other people's gifts instead of appreciating the gift that we have. So now we want something we can never be to the degree that someone else is. And so it's a find your, my brother Kyrie Irving said, find your tribe season. You know, the world would be at much better peace if everybody was around the ones that were like them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. We enjoy diversity. We enjoy inclusion. But it also creates misunderstandings. Misunderstandings create issues and problems and wars because when we are weary of people we don't understand, you can never fully accept somebody you don't understand. Right? You may say, well, I won't judge them. Well, you know, this is life and everybody is everybody. But you don't fully understand it. You wouldn't want that person around your children. You wouldn't want that person at home with you because you couldn't truly be comfortable. Human beings have issues with things that we don't understand. But when there's people that are like us, it puts us at ease. We're in relaxation. There's no stress. Everybody has an understanding. Oh, we should build this. Oh, you see the world like this? So do I, right? Then it increases our power and our abilities together to be able to mastermind and build our own worlds. When the world was at a state of, you know, peace and prosperity, it's because those who are of the same tribe and likeness were around those who are the same tribe and likeness. The wars didn't come happen into different tribes started crossing over, right? To different mindsets started crossing over. And Africa is the most diverse continent on the planet Earth. When we talk diversity, we think it's white, black, and yellow, and brown, red. Mm-hmm. It's, whoa. Africa is the most diverse. Mm-hmm. I heard, what's the scientist's name? I forget his name at the time. But he was just talking about how, you know, you have the tallest people in the world and the shortest people in the world, right? You have people who may build pyramids and people who may build huts. Right, people whose idea of civilization is more closely connected to the way that we live now, and other people believe in conjuring of spirits, right, and dance ritual, while other people believe in reading and writing and arithmetic. So the cultural diversity of Africa shows you that, you know, Africa or Pangaea or Asia Minor or Major, however you want to call the original state of Earth, right? When people of different mental and psyche degrees were around each other, people of different atmospheres going to think differently. People who get different, you know, amount of sunlight versus people who live in the cold would think differently. But when you put these people together, right now, there's a problem. I was out at this restaurant the other day, and it's freezing cold to me. I got the hoodie on, joggers. I'm freezing. Next to me is a Caucasian guy. He got a tank top on and some shorts. And we talk about how we're all one, but we are different, and we have to recognize the uniqueness in each individual in order to appreciate each other. We go through different cycles, right? That cycle of wintertime is not the best time for black people. We become very vitamin deficient, right? Seasonal depression can creep in on us more. People who come from colder climates are more accustomed to acclimate to that much easier.
Yeah.
So that could be some of their peak time for activating and hunting and being more ambitious. While that might be our time to kind of chill a little bit, put the house in order, and then wait for springtime to come. But if you tell everybody who's in this one mixed bowl to operate the same and grade them off that same skill, one person may, well, shit, I don't feel like doing it. The other person, like, I feel like doing it. Are you lazy? No, it's just not my season, right? And so human beings have not recognized the differences, and that's why the customization of society is better than the generalization of society.
Wow. The customization. I love that. You sound like you took some anthropology courses when you talk about the genetic diversity in Africa. And
I'm a polymath, man. I love to study.
I want to ask you one final question, because I know you're big. You're a polymath. You're knowledgeable in all areas, I think, of the human being. Since this show is about healing, what are some ways that people can heal mind, body, spirit? Just simple ways, practical ways that tomorrow they can start doing.
Healing the mind. Anything that deals with the mind, right, is dealing with the domain of thought and psychic energy, right? It's like people have mental illnesses. And one, people, they don't think about what mental illnesses they think. They don't think about brain health, number one. And I think that that's probably a huge issue. We talk about mental illness all day long, and nobody talks about the substance of things that the brain is being fed with. So the brain can have many different type of injuries. If it's a physical injury, then that's harder, right? Because it actually has to heal from a physical injury.
Like a concussion.
And it can create, you know, damage in the brain to where those synapses are no longer functioning the same way. So that person is literally not the same person because there's inflammation within the brain. When you're talking about, you know, healing the mind, I believe that it first starts with your childhood reflections. One thing of being able to travel to the past is literally being able to go back into your mind through every circumstances that made you who you are. We could have a million hours of good time in life, but it's the 5 hours of bad things that happen in life that become who we are. And so I've become a person that it's easier for me to focus on the good times, because the bad times just make the good times worth it. If I have a day where there was 5 terrible days, right, out the year, but it was 360 good days, that's a good investment. You understand me? Yeah. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to think about those 360 good days while somebody else may be thinking about those 5 bad days too much. In my past, the way I do, I change my past, because with me being mature, now that I am, I have a greater perception on why everything turned out the way it did. Wow. Most people are suffering from something that already happened, right? And then they're suffering from what they think is going to happen. I go on my past of my childhood, my high school, things that happened with my parents, right? I learn how to forgive myself through every iteration of life. I learn how to see things for what they are. You was a young boy at that time. This was happening. You had to react that way. That was your programming. Now see it, learn from it, and move on. So as an adult, you would have a different perspective, but some people are still operating from a childhood perspective of trauma. You understand me? So for me, it's literally going back in the reflections of my past and everything that I go through and turn it into a lesson.
Great.
So it makes it impossible for me to have a bad day, right? Mm. Not if I learned something from it, it wasn't bad, right? But some people, their mind doesn't have enough energy to turn it into a positive, because it's literally positive thinking. The things with the mind is when we talked about environment, right? Being able to reconstruct a better environment for your mind is key. Being around better people, learning better things, and learning thinking techniques that you can use as a resource to apply for a better way of living. So the anything in the mind has to be dealt with the mind, but it also deals with the gut, right? It also deals with what you eat. You can think positive, but as you eat negative, it cancels it out.
Would you say what you eat is either information or inflammation?
Yeah, it's either information or inflammation. Information comes from the light of the foods that we eat, right? So our body eats light, right, from the food that we digest, solar energy. And that energy is telling the body what to do with that light, where to fix it, make the cells over here, right? Blood flows over here, cleanse yourself over here, strengthen the immune system here, right? But when you eat, you know, inflammation, right, that's the body immune system attacking itself, literally. So the body is consuming chemicals. Oh, what's this? What's this you brought? I can't do nothing with this. Right? So now your body's called the police. It called the white blood cells over. White blood cells start shooting stuff up. It's shooting the good stuff and the bad stuff. Now you get inflammation. You understand me?
Yeah.
So now it's a problem. But if you would have sent us some enlightenment, it would have been all right. That happened in the hoods of America all the time.
I love it.
People falsely call the cops. Yeah. All of a sudden, somebody dead. It wasn't even no problem. Mm. You understand me? But if it was only called in circumstances to where it was needed, then it would be seen as a good thing.
Wow.
So when you are falsely calling the cops in your own body, you know what I'm saying? Got cardiac arrest.
What a visual. I love that.
You know, same thing with the body. The body and the mind are one, really.
Yes.
But if the body doesn't have energy, because sometimes the body can make up for what the mind lacks. Sometimes the mind can make up for what the body lacks. But if they both lacking, then you don't have source to pull from besides spirit. And then when you pull them from spirit, you're going to be super drained, right? Because this is like your reserve. Your body, you should have so much energy throughout the day like a child. A child goes through energy like this. And then sleep, boom. Then wake back up. And it's just like that, right? A human being, energy be like this.
Yeah, fluctuates.
But we have ultradian cycles, right? So we have cycles throughout the day where we have peak times, 90-minute cycles, 20-minute rest cycles throughout the day. We have circadian cycles throughout the day, 24-hour cycles. A woman has ophridian cycles for a menstrual cycle, right? Then we have seasonal cycles. So being in tune with the cycles and the rhythms of life will help you understand that I'm stressing during the time I'm supposed to be resting. And that's the only reason. The only reason I'm stressing is because I'm trying to work through times I'm supposed to rest.
Yeah.
But if I rest and get back up, I'm back at peak performance and it feels like flow again. So human beings are out of touch with nature and the rhythm of nature. And that's why we have so many issues.
19 Keys, you have dropped a lot of gems on us today. And I appreciate you coming by and then enjoying the sauna and the coconut water with us. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about the things that you say and talk about and learn from you?
Well, I have high-level conversations. You know, fortunately, we was able to make something that we was taught, you know, wouldn't be successful, right? Long-form content of intellectual entertainment. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you can go on there and we have many different subjects of conversations that we have that reach millions of views.
Millions of views. Yeah.
And it's been a really great cultural phenomenon because people of all walks of life have been like, yo, this is what we've been missing and we need this. And that's probably been my most beautiful experience with that period. You know, I've written many books. One of the main books that I have out that people love is Paradigm Keys, Solution-Based Mind Reprogramming. It's a simple read, but it's an easy 1, 2, 3, 4 step that a person can get into that is applicable science for the mind. We also, of course, have our products, right? So when we talk about brain health, we have our mushrooms where they have the sports moss that's going to increase that adenosine triphosphate to where you're getting that energy boost within your body and getting oxygen, decreasing that lactate acid buildup, balancing your hormones and things of that nature. And that's that sports moss. And that one's a very powerful one that people love. I say 2 a day, go work out, go live life. You're going to be energized throughout the rest of the day. And it's also a natural nootropic as well. Same thing with our smart moss. Adderall is having a shortage around the world. Mm-hmm. People shouldn't be doing Adderall in the mm-hmm. first place. Mm-hmm. But if you want a calm, good focus, right, take some of that sports moss. That's going to be good for the brain. Regenesis, you know, helping with the remyelination of the brain, the sheath around the axons to where your brain can flow and get electricity between thoughts and thoughts. So I think that one is super key. And then, of course, just all the other benefits that it have. And, of course, one of our main products that people love is gold water.
Yep.
One of the things that people purport the most is about lucid dreaming, right? Like, there's people that go their whole life where they don't dream in color. Some people don't dream at all. And some people have never lucid dreamed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it helps with that electrical activity within the brain and the body. We're born with 0.02% of gold within the body.
Mm.
So scientists found out that they believe that it helps electrify the nerve endings and decrease inflammation within the body. In ancient Egypt, they used to take it as an elixir of immortality. Even in the UK in the 1800s, they used to give it to people to help them get off alcohol addiction, right?
Wow.
So if you think about what happens during alcohol, it floods your system to where your electric circuit's short.
Yeah.
So if you have gold in your body, which is a superconductor of electricity, then it's going to keep that electrical flow going. Right. So, you know, just thinking about ancient science to modern man.
Yes.
You understand me? And then, of course, you know, I do weekly coaching called Mental Engineering, where every week, so let's say 2023, that's 52 weeks of mental, business, financial, physical coaching within our program. So, you know, I try to create a whole entire environment and lifestyle for people to be able to step in once they tap into these high level conversations.
You are a gift to this planet, and I want you to continue to speak, to have the courage to speak, continue to learn, stay humble, because you're doing amazing things on this planet, and it's an honor to finally meet you.
Likewise.
And I hope we can collaborate on some stuff in the future.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you.